Hey, all, welcome into the Talking Tide podcast on the Ryer on YouTube channel. You can catch it on YouTube. Some fantastic Alabama and SEC related content right there at Ryer on YouTube. Give it a like, give it a subscribe. I'm Chase Goodred, Tuscaloosa News sports columnist, along with the aforementioned Travis Ryer, bringing a Talking Tide to you after a bit of a hiatus. Travis, I guess we got a little bit of catching up to do. We won't look too far in the rearview mirror, though. Don't have to. Because the Alabama basketball and football programs in the news in a pretty big way right now. Obviously, basketball with this heartbreaking loss to Tennessee we're going to jump in with. And, of course, football getting cranked up with spring practice. There's no shortage of topics.
Yeah, it's like that annual confluence when we get the winter sports kind of combining or blending in with the spring stuff like spring football. We got baseball and softball going on as well. Kind of like the fall, right? When you get the football season and the basketball seasons coming together. This is right. Sort of the winter spring version of that. So no shortage of topics. Felt like it was time to jump back on here and let's chop it up.
Yeah. Crimson Tide goes to Knoxville. Travis, Nate Oates' squad comes back with a 79-76 loss, comes in heartbreaking fashion. I'm going to estimate 30 feet on that game winner, Travis. I'm in the ballpark there, right?
Yeah. And 28-32. So 30. Yeah. Right there in the middle.
It was one Alabama should have had. And I think if you're Nate Oates, what gets you as much as anything is this was overall the best game we've seen Alabama play in Knoxville since they beat them. And I guess it was maybe 2021.
I think John Petty maybe went off in that game.
This one, and Nate Oates alluded to it, that they outplayed Tennessee for the majority of the game, almost all the game, and then things went haywire at the end. Some inexcusable mistakes, inexcusable coaching, frankly, and Oates, to his credit, kind of pointed the finger at himself after the game, said, look, this put this one on me. And he doesn't do that all the time, let's be honest, you know, but he did it this time.
Well, and he should have, because situationally, as he pointed out, it wasn't just an end of game failure. It was the end of the first half failure. Alabama had closed out that first half so impressively, looked like it was going to be about a 7-point lead going into the half, feeling like they're, as much as you could be in that environment, be in control of things. They give up a just straight line drive the length of the court, and that chips away at some of that momentum. And then, of course, they're to be outscored 7-0 in the final 30 seconds. And even though Oates did own it, and I think his intent was genuinely to point the finger at himself, I like that he did it for another reason, too, because this isn't really a young basketball team. So if they heard their coach say that, maybe it speaks to, I'm not doing my job. You know, Jaren Stevenson, he's not a redwood in there. He's not, you know, 6'9", 270, okay? He's slender, but he's still 6'9". And 2 years into this thing, you think Jaren Stevenson still got to be able to get a box out right down the stretch that he wasn't able to get. Now, you did show up, I thought, in the form of LeBaron Filon, who still finished with 13 points, 4 assists. Numbers in the box look pretty good. But some of those inbounds plays were rough, trying to get the ball in and couldn't really do it there. I thought Filon at times, you saw some of the experience. I thought he was big late. He went length of the court, made a left-handed layup, scored down there. But there were a couple of different things that you just can't do late in game, situationally late in half. And, you know, I think maybe some of these guys will look at it and say, you know, I know coach is owning it, but you know, I got to get some of these things done in my own right, like a box out.
Yeah, absolutely. My thoughts, Travis, going back to the inbounds play at the end of the game with the turnover that was just so critical. I think I see it pretty much how you did on that. If we're going to blame Nate Oates for not getting the timeout, which I think we both are, then you can only blame Filon for not calling out so much. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's got to be on one or the other.
But then a lot of people say, why do you have a freshman inbounding the basketball in situations like that? And I think that goes back to, it speaks to how much Nate trusts this guy. You know, I mean, right. There's a lot of trust that Nate has. There's a lot of trust, obviously, because the decision to move Mark Sears off the ball more and play Phylon on the ball and play Aiden Holloway on the ball. I think some of it was necessity, but he trusts those guys, doesn't he?
He does. And he just alluded a couple weeks ago how he has lately been telling Mark Sears, look, Phylon's going to be on the floor a little bit more. He's coming along. You need to trust him the same way you trusted Estrada last year.
Yeah.
Oates made that comment to Phylon. That Oates said that, told the reporters that a couple weeks ago or so at a press conference. So that kind of signals to you what he thinks of Phylon, I think.
Right. So, you know, that's where the concern comes in a little bit, and having an inexperienced guy in a situation like that. But Phylon's a pro maybe as soon as next year. So, you know, when we say he's a young guy, he's played a full year of basketball and he is a pro, perhaps a first round pro in 2025, 2026.
A lot of talent for sure.
I love the way he plays. I mean, he's going to come at you. And I think that's what you have to do to Tennessee, because if Tennessee senses that you're a little bit passive or a little bit hesitant, they ramp up that D even more. I also thought, Chase, get your thoughts on this. I thought Alabama got a good whistle in Knoxville. That was probably as big a concern as I would have going into the game.
Right.
Because if a Rick Barnes team is allowed to essentially play prison yard rules and just, you know, foul you until they finally call it, and get physical to that extent, it's going to be tough. I thought Alabama benefited from a pretty good whistle and to that end didn't always take advantage of it at the free throw line.
I agree with that part of it for sure. Tennessee was still physical, but I thought the refs handled that game pretty well overall. You know, you still saw Sears having to make a lot of contact to get by people on some plays that would have been called blocks, I think, here and there. You know what I mean? Nobody's better than Sears at drawing a block and penetration.
He can sell it. And he can sell it sometimes to a fault. Sometimes I think he goes through stretches where he's trying to draw whistles even more than he's trying to score the basketball. I think these last four or five games, he's been more intent on actually scoring.
Right.
And the whistles seem to have followed that way.
Right. When he gets bumped trying to go by somebody, he's got a way of redirecting and keeping his balance. And when he redirects and kind of changes direction a little bit off the bump, that's where a lot of those whistles come in.
Definitely. And I think that's an improvement he's made again over the stretch. And so there's still some positives to take. I know it's a tough one when you lose a game like that you feel like you had control of, you should have won. And especially when you think about what you have coming up this week, Florida in town midweek, another top three team. And then you go on the road next weekend to take on the top ranked Auburn Tigers. So from that perspective, even though this was a top 10 team that you lost to, it feels like certainly a lost opportunity relative to what you have coming up in the next week.
Yeah, Florida and Auburn upcoming to finish the regular season for Alabama. At this point, it looks like they are probably on the outside looking in for that number one seed. We'll see what happens. I looked at this too, though, Travis, another postseason ramification for how they finish. It's not impossible for Alabama to fall out of the double bye in the SEC tournament, because if they end up dropping one to Florida and dropping the last one to Auburn, they'll be 12-6 in the league. Mizzou has got Oklahoma and Kentucky to finish out. If Mizzou knocked both of them off, they'd be 12-6 in the league, just like Alabama. They beat Alabama head to head. So would that not put them in for the double bye?
I would think so. And it just speaks to how brutal this league is this year, because we still went into this season knowing that, and I felt strongly about Florida back in the offseason, but I didn't feel strongly about Missouri, you know, and you look at Missouri this season and it's not just Alabama, Auburn, Tennessee, Florida. You know, Kentucky is struggling here down the stretch. And so it's tough if you don't get the double bye. But, you know, look, again, I think there's still some positive. I like to think that guys like Phylon and Holloway are going to be better for what happened Saturday in some instances. And that'll only be a good thing for this team, regardless of how it plays out. Because, look, If you do show up with your dobber down midweek, Florida will put you in one of those early holes like you had against Auburn and Missouri. Now, you even at home, you can get down 10-12 real quick, and that's not where you want to be against this Florida team.
Puck and Tide podcast on the Ryer on YouTube channel coming at you. Chase Goodbread and Travis Ryer reconvening here after a couple months off, catching up on Alabama basketball. Going to catch up on some Alabama football now as well, Travis. Spring practice getting underway for Kalen DeBoer. Second season, of course, under DeBoer. The disappointing 9-4 football finish last year, now in the rearview mirror. And quarterbacks in focus, Travis, as they always are when there's turnover at that position. It's going to be highly talked about. Is it Ty Simpson? Is it a battle? What do we got there?
It needs to be a battle, at least in terms of how it's presented to that room. And I think that's certainly the way it will be. Although Ty obviously has the benefit of program experience, not necessarily coordinator or scheme experience, because, you know, yeah, it was Nick Sheridan and part of Kalen DeBoer and all that in 2024, but with Ryan Grubb in there now, does that change in terms of how he views things, how he evaluates quarterbacks? I know Sheridan has hung on to that quarterback title, but you got to think it's going to be the guy Ryan Grubb thinks needs to be in that spot running that offense. So, you know, I know there's a lot of talk about quarterback. I'm fascinated, like everybody else, about Keelan Russell, what he might eventually be able to do. And as a result of that, how you manage your numbers as you go throughout this process, even looking ahead to August potentially. But for the here and now, the first snap should be Ty's, but then it should go any way it needs to go in terms of how the competition plays out. And I'll tell you, I'm more interested in that offensive line. I think quarterback will take care of itself. I still have enough trust in Kalen DeBoer and Ryan Grubb and Sheridan to get that figured out. Chris Kapilovic and that offensive line of his, that's where I think the most improvement probably still needs to take place. They weren't awful last year, but Caden Proctor, this is a huge offseason in spring for the big man, because he really hadn't had one the last couple of years after the stuff with Iowa last year and all that. He needs to have a hellacious offseason, and there needs to be continued improvement at both tackle spots. I think interior-wise, you feel pretty good about that in some ways. But you still got to figure something out. Just all around play for the offensive line to me is what's got to take a step forward.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. That right tackle position, especially, Travis, is a sore spot. Was a sore spot last year. It's been kind of up and down. I think, you know, I've commented in the past that I've thought that Alabama's offensive line has been on a relatively steady decline since 2020. And obviously the 2020 line was a great one. It won a national championship. But ever since that year, I think there's a pattern that kind of fell off a little bit more. Well, I actually think that 24 line was a little better than the 23 line. But that's only because the 23 line, Travis, gave up like 28 sacks in the first seven or games or whatever it was, you know?
Yeah, I agree. Again, I don't think the last year's offensive line was horrific. Interior-wise, I think you still felt good about Roberts and Booker and Brailsford from guard to guard. But, boy, the tackle positions at times were so bad. And I guess another question is, how much does it really matter other than pass protection? Because what we saw from this team a season ago, was not really a huge commitment to running the football from a traditional perspective. Now you had Jalen Milroe at quarterback. That might change too. Ty Simpson can run the football. But how much do they look to really get the backs involved this time around? Because one of the knocks against Ryan Grubb, at least what you heard anyway, in his season up in Seattle, was that there wasn't enough of a run game. They were fine. Mm-hmm. When you looked at the passing stats and Geno Smith and all those things, look pretty good or good. But there wasn't really much of a run game to lean on. And maybe the quarterback situation will dictate that needs to be more the case until you really know what you have at that position.
The name's slipping my mind, but the kid who transferred to Washington, I think from Mississippi State, and started that big year that they had under DeBoer right before he came to Alabama. That kid had like 1,000 yards rushing for Grubb that year, but I watched a lot of that. I watched a lot of football on that team because I did some other things, just watching tape to figure some things out about that Washington offense. He got 1,000 yards, but it's like it was on the change-up draw play, every time. You know what I
Yeah,
mean?
it's very it, look, and that's okay. It's the run game's going to be complementary in this offense. It is, and that's okay. But that's why there's even more pressure on getting it right at quarterback in this type of specific offense. And then also, can you protect that guy? And that's where your offensive tackles come into play.
No doubt. And obviously, I say draw play. They were in shotgun all year. I'm not talking about draw play from under center, but just that delayed handoff, and then you got the defense so far spread out that, in that respect, it's almost, Mike Leach-ish. That's kind of what I saw from the run game.
It's extended handoff sometimes too. And so, you feel good about your wide receiver situation, obviously, with Ryan Williams back, Jeremy Bernard. Interested to see what Jalen Hale's able to do trying to come back. Tight end is a question mark. You saw Robbie Oates and CJ Dupree with some solid showings up in Indianapolis here the last couple of days. So, you got to work some things out at that position as well.
I think tight end has kind of been under talked about, if that's possible before spring practice even starts. But I mean, I think Josh Cuevas is just the kind of tight end they like in this offense. I think he'll be all the better next year in
They
Grubb's
leaned on him more, it
system.
felt like, late in the season, didn't it? Felt
It
like,
did. It
and
did.
especially in big moments, that's where they wanted it to go in some of those situations.
But if you get past Cuevas, I would suggest, other than the maybe right tackle, you look thinner at tight end than just about anywhere else on the field, either side of the ball. Because after, you lose, like you said, you lose Dupree, you lose Oots. That's a lot of snaps right there.
Tons.
And then,
And they were 12 personnel a good bit last year, right? I mean, they're more two tights than people think. Kalen DeBoer offense, Ryan Grubb, all that. They think it's all 11, and it's not. It's a lot of 12, or it was last year.
And some of what you do got coming back doesn't necessarily look like the Cuevas type that you want. It's more like the Y
Danny
tight end,
Lewis.
Danny Lewis Jr., for instance.
Hand in the ground, in line.
That position screams to me, Travis, as opportunity for true freshman impact, doesn't it?
Some form or fashion, how you go about working with that. And obviously they've made some additions at the wide receiver position. So, maybe they're going to feel like they can be more 11, this year, and be more three wide receivers on the field together, and see how that works.
Speaking of three wide receivers, two coming back who, of course, are highly productive, Travis. And after that, the room kind of disappeared, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. Which is interesting, but that's going to happen in today's game. But if you could have two coming back, these are exactly, obviously, the two that you would want. And so, going to be a little bit different because SEC, and there's tape, and I understand all that. Were a bit of unknowns coming into this situation a year ago. Bernard coming in from Washington, Williams obviously coming in as a incredible true freshman. So going to be a little bit of a book on both those guys, and also, just how this offense works in general. And I think that this off season is big, because last off season it was a whirlwind. Had to be a whirlwind for Kalen, and maybe to a fault, he was so accessible, right? I mean, you couldn't turn on a radio, a podcast, or just about anything on a daily basis a year ago at this time and not hear from Kalen DeBoer. Doesn't seem like we've heard as much from him this offseason. Obviously, it's not as newsy this time around as it was a year ago when you're replacing the all-time great in Nick Saban, but it should be more of a, I guess, less noisy offseason in some ways. For Kalen DeBoer, although I know this documentary that's out now that sort of relives last season, I would have nixed that. We don't need to do that all over again, you know. Yeah. But I know fans will still pour over it. But yeah, I think that's where this offseason is so important. What is this program really going to be? Because this feels like the first real run through a recruiting class, talent acquisition, off-season workouts, and kind of how they're going to do things in the spring moving forward.
Speaking of that, Doc, 2 minutes ago we were just talking about how the wide receiver room emptied out behind Bernard and Williams, and they had that scene on the dock where Shepard's like, there's a reason why only two of y'all are taking notes.
Wow. Yeah. That can tell you a lot. And Shep doesn't strike me as a guy who puts up with a lot of nonsense. So the guys that he wants there are probably still there. Wants there is the way I took that.
8A, Travis, April 12th, of course. There's going to be 3 spring practices next week, Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Then the school is on spring break. So, of course, there's always the hiatus there. They come back for the last 12 practices. Travis, the last one, of course, A-Day on April 12th. But as we've learned, it's going to be – I'm using my Chris Farley
air quotes,
scaled down.
Maybe, right? I'm a little heavy.
Right.
That was so good with Farley back in the day, RIP. Yeah, I think the A and A-Day this time stands for almost A-Day.
There you go.
It's going to be like Splenda A Day.
What are they going to do? I wonder. I mean, there's a lot of ways you can do it. You know, sometimes it just looks like a practice.
Pro Bowl it up, have them do tug of wars and stuff.
And it appears to be kind of a trend because maybe trend's the wrong word. There's about 4 other schools that are saying we're not doing a spring game at all, but they don't all have the same reasons. There's like a different reason coming out of each of the 4.
Well, a couple of them have said poaching. We getting poached.
Yeah, that's right.
Come on. Spring game in 2025, how much does that really have to do with poaching? Everybody knows your roster. You know, you all recruit against each other, right?
You know, you say that, but a lot of these coaches – don't even want because of the timing of the spring portal, right? Yeah. The April 15 to 29, whatever it is, coming right off of the spring game. You know, and look, you and I have dealt with coaches long enough, Travis, to know that a lot of them can be paranoid. But their rationale is, I don't want to broadcast what I got to the world 2 days before the damn portal opens.
I don't know. I don't know how much I buy that in 2025, but I'll tell you this. I went to USC's spring game last year at the Los Angeles Coliseum. And just to see what they spent on A-Day, they had one end zone set up like an outdoor 5-star restaurant in one of the end zones. They had a full buffet with any type of food you could want. This was all recruiting oriented. Okay. Mm-hmm. And to think about what they spent just for that, for a spring game. And then best I could tell, they hosted all of these prospects. And the prospects basically looked at it, most of them, and said, yeah, that's cool. Now, what's my NIL deal? Mm-hmm. So if that's the case, and you think about what these schools spend on spring games and the event process of it, wouldn't you be better off just taking that money and keeping it in your NIL? Because that's what a lot of these kids now get off the plane or out of the car as soon as they hit town asking about. Now, the days when that dinner in Beverly Hills with Lincoln Riley really resonated with a family, you got families now, from what I was told last time around, they wouldn't even show up for the dinners. They just would show up for the NIL meeting.
Right.
That's who they want to talk to. They didn't even really care about talking to Lincoln Riley or some of these coaches. I mean, so the expense too. I'm not saying that it's time that we have to worry about Alabama and other programs having to count pennies. But, you know, if you can sort of reallocate some funds towards your NIL in some of these instances with some of these schools, some of these programs, you'd probably be smarter off doing that.
Right, right. No doubt. And there's a lot of creativity out there, a lot of innovation out there on how to make a buck.
Yeah.
For NIL. And I think the schools, I mean, look, you got your deep pocketed schools like Texas and A&M, oil money schools, Ohio State, Notre Dame. They're never going to be short of cash. But for the programs that are comparatively strapped to their, you know, yeah, to their rivals, innovation's big.
And the other side of that is the spring game weekend should be a big weekend for your collectives, you know, right? That's sure. When you should be, that should be one on the calendar for the collective that's really making a push. So you sort of need it the mm-hmm. spring game weekend to get people, maybe get in front of more people at one time.
Right.
But I do think there are some programs that are kind of looking at it from an economic perspective and saying, you know what, it really doesn't make that much sense if we need this money to go elsewhere.
Yeah. I remember seeing a clip, and I don't know how old it is. It could be a couple of years old now by now, but saw a clip of the Arkansas NIL director who was speaking to boosters, speaking to donors. And he said, and I might have the numbers messed up too, but the gist of it was he's like, yeah, you want to know why we're struggling recruiting? Ole Miss has got 5,000 members in their NIL club. We got 1,000.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. You know, and that's the name of the game now. And so, but it would be a shame too, because A-Day weekend is a staple for thousands of folks. Mm-hmm. And it serves a great purpose in for the fan base, in terms of it's affordable, first of all, right? I mean, you can afford to go to A-Day when it's free. And there's a lot of cool events, the captain ceremony, all those things. So it still needs to have a place, but is it going to be the type of event, Chase, moving forward, that I get in the car on Friday morning and say, boy, I'm going to Tuscaloosa until Sunday.
Right.
I think that's something we talked about before that you mentioned too.
Yeah. The bars and restaurants, you know, they want a full on game because that's the best way to keep the crowd. You know what I mean?
It is going to have a commerce man. You know?
Yeah. If they dumb it down too much and it really just looks like a practice.
Yeah.
You might not see a huge dip from one year to the next from 25 to 26, but if they were to rip off three or four A-Days like that in a row, by 2030, you'd see a serious dip in attendance.
I think there's still some other places. I think Georgia's still doing G-Day, it sounds like, you know, so.
Yeah.
I don't think they're all in mass going into oblivion.
But Sark said Texas is, we're doing it because of wear and tear. That was his, you know, I think, who else? Florida State said we got renovations going on. Wasn't that Florida State's answer?
How many people show up for the Garnet and Gold game? You could play that damn thing at a truck stop. You could play that at a Buc-ee's. You could just set up a field at a Buc-ee's parking lot, and that'd be enough for the Florida State spring game.
Royalties to Travis for anybody who clips that for a Gator podcast. You know, some Gator podcast is going to snip that. You know, and you
can play that at a Buc-ee's and still have parking spots left over.
Yeah,
you know,
you're about to be viral in Gainesville, Travis.
And of course, Alabama opens it in Tallahassee. So
that's right.
I'm sure. I'll hear that. Yeah.
Yeah. Lots of fun here on the Talking Tide podcast. Glad to get together again, and we'll do it again soon. We got basketball postseason starting to crank up, Travis. Obviously.
We'll talk some defense, too, maybe next week on the show.
Yes,
get into
absolutely.
The defensive side of the ball. We talked offense tonight, but we'll get into some D with Kane Womack and those guys coming up.
That'll be it for Talking Tide this evening. For Travis Ryer of the Ryer on YouTube channel, I'm Chase Goodbread, sports columnist with the Tuscaloosa News. We'll talk to you next time on Talking Tide.